Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of A Radio Geekly. I'm just Jess, and I am joined in the studio by collective members Conch, David, and newest inducted collective member Open Mike. Hello.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you for welcoming me on board the Radio Geekly fleet.
Awesome. Today is going to be a great day, folks. You know why? Because it's Star Wars Day. Star Wars is one of the biggest genres of geek fandom, and we are going to break it down for some fun highlights, some serious conversation, and possibly some special guests. But let's get started with the question I had for all of you. What was your first exposure to Star Wars? It could be how old you were, what you were doing, was it a movie, was it an actual character? Just how was your first exposure experience to the Star Wars realm? I will start with David.
My father used to work late at his store, and I would be there sometimes until he closed at midnight. And they used to do the things, you know, back when we just had regular over-the-air television. They'd have a movie night on Sundays, and every few years they'd play Star Wars. And that was pretty much my first, you know, it was like a little 9-inch TV, and I'm just glued to the television.
Wow.
In the back room just watching. Oh, this is amazing. I don't know how old I was, but it would have been, you know, probably sometime in the 80s.
Okay.
Beyond that, it's like discovering them at the library and checking them out all the time, yeah. Stuff like that. So yeah, that was my first exposure.
Cool. Where was it? Do you remember which film it was?
It was the first one.
Okay.
Yep.
Episode 4.
New Hope.
New Hope. Mike?
I can remember all the buzz about the movie that was coming out through the media, and just growing up in the comic book era and all the characters that were supposed to be introduced into the movie made it really exciting and made you want to really go and see the movie. And I can remember gathering up all my friends, and we all wanted to get the first viewing of the film. It was a big deal growing up. It was such a big deal that I had to stand online for 2 hours at the movie theater.
Wow.
And it was worth it. It was well worth it. The story was amazing. It was, up until that point, I never seen anything on screen like that, ever.
Was it for New Hope?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Pretty cool. Conch?
Yes, likewise. It was what is now called the New Hope, A New Hope. And I was an aspiring comics artist and animator in that sweet spot between grade school and junior high. So I could tell right off the bat watching this movie on this enormous screen. Back in the day, they had the movie palaces, which have mostly been torn down, 5 aisles leading down to the screen, that I could tell that Lucas was a comics nerd, which he was. And, you know, then for that Halloween, my friends and I, of course, all dressed up. I was a Jawa with the help of my mom, who sewed the thing, but I attached little pen lights to my glasses.
Wow. So
I could, and then had little black fabric over there. My friends were droids, and I was trying to sell them door to door for Halloween.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. I unfortunately don't have an epic story like that, because I was exposed to Star Wars at a much later age, but I remember watching A New Hope and hearing all the hype about, you know, the character development and everything like that, and just watching it much later. I think I didn't even watch it until the late 90s. Sorry. But there's just so much that came from the intro and the trilogy, and the understanding of how the film industry kind of went into this somewhat of like a new-ish direction, thinking about with the animation, the artwork, the creator, like the character development and things like that, how it was somewhat revolutionary for the time to make some sort of a sci-fi movie, but you actually had to use like props and things and go on location and like the characters, you know, have to act in terms of like, there's something attacking you, act like there's actually something attacking you, you know, and there'd be just that what analog, I guess you're mentioning that before we started the show, Conch, of just like that analog movements of everything and how that was seeming to be something that was pivotal in the artistry of the films itself. And I think that definitely was shown in the trilogies. So that was my exposure of just seeing it much later, but knowing where it originated and how far it's come to the point that when I watched it in the 90s was really, really cool. I'm still fascinated by how the progression has gone on from there to, you know, with the prequel trilogies and now this new sequel trilogy, and how the development of filmmaking has grown along with it. Because, I mean, Star Wars has been around for, what, 40 years?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And how things have progressed in that way has been really cool that there's still a genre that can be seen and appreciated, because I mean it spans generations now, you know. So I'm sure for a lot of us, there's going to be exposure for like our kids and our grandkids and, you know, other generations that are going to be coming into it at different times, but like, and being able to share that with them of like, this is where it actually started, you know, is going to be really, really cool. So another fun question I had for everyone is, did you have a specific character that you have liked or disliked, or something that was really pivotal in your appreciation and like fan geekdom of Star Wars? Do you have like a certain character, or maybe I'm all about the rebellion or whatever?
Well, Yoda was really instrumental to my actually getting into like Joseph Campbell, because, okay, you know, Lucas was a big Joseph Campbell fan. He liked the Power of Myth and that whole series of books. So, I by the time the second film came out, which is still the best written film, let's be serious. You know, that whole mystical side of the whole trilogy was really in bloom. And yeah, and Yoda obviously was gathering all of this sort of guru master kind of energy that that was part of the original series. Now, later when they did the prequels, you know, Lucas had suddenly become a lot more materialist. So I wrote a very nerdy essay for the APA 5 zine in 1999 about how they messed up with midichlorians. They, you know, everything was suddenly, instead of being mystical, everything was material.
Okay.
And that had to do with Lucas, you know, being a much more material guy in the 90s than he was back in the 70s.
Interesting. Mike or David?
I can't really say I'm that detailed. I do like me some Yoda, though. Yoda is the boss. I like Yoda. The first introduction was great. I like the way they introduced the character. It kind of reminded me of the old martial arts Saturday morning cartoons when Luke had to train and learn the Force, and I thought that was great. That was something that I could never get tired of. I'm not sure which series that was, but that part of watching Luke, I think that's what made me like that character a little bit more. But they didn't give him that much exposure down the line. They kind of like drifted away from him, but I would have to go with Yoda and Luke Skywalker.
Nice. David?
I was always a fan of just the heavy hitters with, like, the Empire.
Okay.
I mean, people like, just like the idea of what, you know, Tag and Mahdi are sitting around that table, or General Veers when he's in the Imperial Walker, you know, controlling the lines as they're taking out the shield generator on Hoth, or Admiral Piett, the way he was able to survive throughout the movies of Empire, and then become Captain Piett, and then become Admiral Piett as they kill off the other as Darth Vader's killing off the other commanders, like Admiral Ozzel, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like their stories of like these men who are normal people and able to rise through the ranks through whatever they have to do. And Pete, I think, is probably the one that I think is the coolest in that he seems so normal.
Yeah.
And this is like a back character. No one knows who this guy is,
right?
Unless you're deep into it. But Tarkin, though, the way he is able to be in, you know, he's the way they set him up, you know, Darth Vader is clearly the big bad guy right from the get-go. But here's this guy who's in charge of the first Death Star, and Leia is going, Darth Vader, like, he's on your chain or whatever. It's like, so Tarkin's in control of Darth Vader, so there's something there. And this is before the Emperor's even into the storyline. So
right.
I mean, this guy's got something going. And,
right.
And I just like his cold calculating and so stuff like that. I don't know. But for the light side, what really, I didn't realize just how much was in me still with Luke Skywalker or if it ever was, but the latest movie really brought everything up to the surface, and I didn't realize it was there. I thought I was done with this, but once it all came back with this latest movie, like, oh man, it was. I didn't realize how much of Luke was in me, and just how much that made it. I mean, this new movie, what they did to him, and why I didn't realize what emotions I would still have in me for Luke. So I must have something with that in me too.
Interesting. Hey,
for
might
Luke.
Have a little bit. A little bit of both sides. For me, I'm also a Yoda fan. I've got my nice Yoda earrings and things on right now. But also another character I relate to, I think, just because of my personality type, is Chewbacca, because of his loyalty and dedication. Do we have a little Wookiee in here? There we go. Yep, Chewie's here. Chewie's here in spirit. Yeah, I think because of his just reliability, like, he's always going to be there for Han. Like, he was always there to have his back, and I thought that was just awesome. And I could relate to that in, like, loyalty and friendship and the relationships between certain individuals within the Star Wars, like, realm. There was, you know, friendships and relationships like that, the dedication of supporting one another, and so... related to Chewbacca on that front, you know, there's the Wookiee and a little Wookiee in all of us, I think. yeah, and so thank you for all of you sharing those. And David, kudos to you, man, for name dropping. I mean,
yeah.
I'm enlightened right now for all some of those characters that I had no idea.
I had a deep relationship with Star Wars during the 90s. That was my thing.
Yeah, that's very cool.
You make me want to go back and check for names now.
So were you a fan of the Hammer films back in the 60s? I mean, Peter Cushing, who played Grand Moff Tarkin, was a big star of those, you know, the Hammer films, which brought the Universal horror monsters forward into the age of Technicolor.
I don't know those films. I know he played Doctor Who once for some forgotten
movie. That's right, a couple of movies.
I was more into the Alec Guinness film, his, you know, filmography with all of his great stuff.
Gotcha.
Well, one of the things I had on the film show recently, I had Elliot Levine, who's doing a series on B-movies and noir at Cinema 21.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to talking about how B-movies have become, you know, multi-million dollar productions. Back in the day, they were short, they were cheap.
Yeah.
And there's so many callbacks. I mean, not just Lucas, but also Spielberg, Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's callbacks to the movie serials of the 40s and 50s, like my mom would tell me about these adventure serials that always had cliffhangers. And the anti-heroes, like Han Solo, were always in those. And then the villains were always, you know, sort of, yeah, the Peter Cushing types. And, you know, and obviously they're fans because one of the things Lucas wanted to do was bring Ray Harryhausen aboard, the guy who did Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and all of that. And he actually wouldn't come out of retirement he actually came out of retirement later, but not for Star Wars.
Hmm.
But they took, like, a lot of, if you see his jumpy sort of models from those era in the 50s and 60s, when Star Wars came out, it was the early era of motion control cameras.
Yeah.
So they were actually able to get the motion blur from all the characters and all of the spaceships in there just by using rigs that would blur and cameras that would control that.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I had brought up the fact that when Star Wars first came out, when the original version first came out, the buzz was about all the things that they were going to incorporate into this movie. So you just couldn't wait to see, like, all this claymation, puppetry, these effects. And, I mean, it separated sci-fi movies. It separated itself from sci-fi movies. At the time, you had Logan's Run and Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek, excuse me. And when Star Wars came out, it just cleared the pack. It just separated itself with all of these things. And when you went in, for me, when I went and I watched the movie, I was just amazed by all the different eye candy that I was getting, like the sabers and the lights and the starships and the different animals and species. And it was just it was like going to a nerd museum or something like that. It was awesome.
Even the sound, Ben Burtt would bring in, like he would go out and he would bang on wires,
telephone
lines, to take old crusty TVs and use them for sounds. And he'd bring in old guys from the old special effects days of the 30s and 40s, guys who did actual matte paintings on glass for the foreground sets.
Didn't they say the starship was like a lion's roar slowed down? Like,
wow.
Yeah, they slowed down.
Back in the day of reel-to-reel tape.
Well, this brings up a good point for us to kind of transition into a more deeper discussion, and I'm going to bring the disclaimer to all of our listeners that we will be digging into more of the characters, films, and more specifics right now. So if you have not seen many of the films and or the newest films and or the cartoons and the comic books and things, wait to listen to this later on the archive, because we're going to be digging deep here, folks.
It's okay to reveal details.
It is okay to reveal details.
Spoilers ahead.
So maybe we should bring in some Jabba's palace to kind of let people have that time to think about. There we go. Are you going to dig into the spoilers or what's going to happen here? So a question I had for all of you is, with the trilogies and the Star Wars as a franchise, how has society influenced the development of the characters of the trilogies? So, for example, like when the first trilogies came out, New Hope, it was something that was different. Like you were mentioning, Mike, the characters, the artwork, the new creativity in these worlds, this was something new. And then as they moved into doing the prequels, how a lot of that was changed and transitioned, and there was some pushback. There was a lot of just kind of open-ended discussion, like, what is George Lucas doing and what is happening? And now going into the new sequel trilogies, how Lucasfilm has been bought in by Disney and there's new people adding into the stories.
That's right. Is Princess Leia now a Disney princess?
I don't know. See, that's a discussion as well. But like seeing those transitions, how have all of us, just in our opinions, how have we seen those kind of changes shift based upon what's going on in society?
I think there's a fascinating documentary. I shouldn't say that documentary. It's a YouTube video on the first movie by Rocket Jump, where the movie was found in the edit. And I kind of have to agree with the fact that George Lucas is not really a great filmmaker. He is an idea man, and he knows what he wants.
Okay.
But he needs other people to help get him there. And his wife saved the movie, the original movie, where when he originally had it edited, and if you watch the movie and you look at it, there were no stakes in the original edit. The X-Wings and whatnot were going to take out the Death Star, and they didn't even have the Death Star coming to blow up the base on Yavin 4. It was just there. They could have done it any time. There were no, you know, he didn't have that story. So his wife, they did a filming screening with other famous directors like Spielberg and stuff, and they're like, okay. And they re-edited the whole thing. They put in stakes. They put in, just conflict, and they made the movie what it is today. And George Lucas was, revered as this wonderful filmmaker.
Interesting.
The other two, he didn't direct those. I mean, clearly his influence is all over him, but
right.
But he changed the rules when it comes to a director, where he has the credit when he actually didn't direct the movies.
Okay.
Which is kind of an interesting thing. They rewrote how Hollywood makes films right there because of his clout by that point. Then he did the prequels, and he had control of those. And that's where you kind of get to where, you see what happened with those. Maybe he should have had someone rein him in. Maybe he should have given control to someone else, say, this is what I want.
Yes.
But we're going to work together. We're going to let, Lawrence Kasdan do his thing.
Yeah, let's work on the Gungans a little bit here.
So that's where I kind of, it was kind of the massive disappointment of the 90s and early aughts with the second trilogy. But you got to say this, the movies were still their own movies.
True.
And that's kind of where the criticism of the new series were, where the Force Awakens is a rehash of A New Hope. And that's kind of... And Force Awakens, I think, was a decent movie. It was beautiful. It set up a lot of great stuff, and it brought it kind of won a lot of people back.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, like, at that point, I was, I'd moved on. I was done with Star Wars. It was no longer it was okay to give up your virginity in the 90s until the prequels came out, and then you're like, this is both cool and or it's not even cool, and it is like the shame. Oh, it just is all washed out. So when you start winning stuff back with The Force Awakens, you're like, the people are back, even though they didn't really have Luke.
Was it true, David, that J.J. Abrams had some of the original writers come back in to?
I don't know. Hope? See, I'm still I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know the Lawrence Kasdan thing with the other movies he's been working on.
Yeah.
But, and then we get to the new stuff. Rogue One is its own thing, and I'm good with that. I actually like that movie. But the latest movie, and I don't know if we've been around the table, if we've all seen that one.
The Last Jedi?
That one broke my heart. And that one destroyed.
Yes.
It was.
Yes.
I sat there and watched the whole thing, and I, like, my mouth was open, like, what is going on?
Yes.
And I couldn't believe what was happening to young me from when I first saw the series. Older me when I actually,
Was your lightsaber burning out?
Well, see, the thing is, they did burn out already. I thought I was done with this.
Okay.
But then I was like, they brought the guys back. The old team's here again.
Yeah.
They brought the gang back.
Yeah. And then it's like, and then that's where I was talking about before. I didn't realize how much Luke was still in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I still care about this guy. I still care about this story. And what do? They just murder him. It's character assassination. And and that's where I just don't, there's a disconnect, and I don't know there's no redemption either. They kill him.
I read an article about Mark Hamill's discontent with how Luke was developed in this new trilogy. Like, he was like, this is not how Luke Skywalker would respond to this, but I'm just gonna be my Mark Hamill self and just.
It was
really odd to have him say that.
I'm kind of torn because I'm blessed to actually see the first movie, and to see them try to recreate that with new characters and bringing the band back together and trying to it looked like a disaster to me. And I have to agree, the way they presented Luke Skywalker, like this bitter old man, and he was just angry and negative, and just everything about him, it was kind of like Force.
He was the comic relief. In a way,
trying.
And I'm like, what?
That too hard.
Was, yeah.
Too hard.
I had dreams of him just milking that giant dinosaur.
Oh, God.
And guzzling. And he's like, it's dripping down.
I could not find a reason for that.
Yeah.
No,
why did we have to do that?
No. We're already ruining your whole,
your whole childhood.
Everything you stood for, we're going to ruin that for you. And we're going to make you look like a complete grizzled old fool at the time.
Right, right.
And he was supposed to, and that's, it's funny that you mentioned how the first one was written by someone and then the second one. Reflecting back, I can see it because you can see different inputs, but this one just looks like a cluster of people just throwing things into a hat and shaking it up.
Well, it's interesting because the guy who did it wrote it, Ryan Johnson. And, mm-hmm. and if anything, we should be like, people say like too many cooks, people, there's all these input.
Right, but well, there was not.
Here yeah. we actually let a guy have control. We let him have control of this huge property.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's like, we need more cooks. You just...
Yeah.
This is much worse, letting this guy just have complete carte blanche over these very important, yeah. established people and fixtures, you know, mm-hmm. fixtures in people's lives. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was this assumption with the, you know, the story arc of the three trilogy format. You know, it's like you have the good side of the Force, then, you know, Empire Strikes Back, and then Return, and everything kind of comes together, and it's like A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. And then the prequels kind of had that same thing as well, but there was an expectation of, you knew what the end was going to be. You knew this is how Darth Vader was created. You know,
right.
So essentially the end is a given.
Right.
And now with here, with the sequels, you're like, well, what the heck?
Well,
Kylo Ren and Rey, like, are they, is it like a new sign of the Force? Like, is it, you know, and Luke Skywalker's this cranky old man that just wants to be by himself. And I don't know.
The original trilogy is a story of redemption. You know, it's Luke's hero's journey, but it's also, it's Darth Vader's story. The first one, and
mm-hmm.
and look at just how ridiculous the thing is when you get to the end, you know, Empire. Luke is giving up everything, taking this huge risk to save a guy who is probably the biggest murderer in the galaxy.
Right.
And he still won't give up on this guy. And in the end, you know, like he saves the day, whatever. Darth Vader's like, you were right, you know, as he's dying.
Right.
I don't think that makes him a good person, but that's the whole Luke. Works, you know, he does everything to look past that
mm-hmm.
and see the good in this horrible, terrible person. Come to the new movie. Kylo Ren, his nephew of his best friend and sister, might possibly hurt some people. And what does Luke do? He's going to go kill him in his sleep.
Yeah.
You know, the worst.
Like,
the
no
most...
wonder why he got all angry and upset and wanted to, you know.
It's like, whoa, okay, whoa, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get super nerdy here by comparing the reboot of the Star Wars franchise with the reboot of the Doctor Who franchise.
Uh-oh.
And I'm going to, there's an amazing quote that I've always loved, which is by the Japanese poet Matsuo Basho. And it says, "Do not seek to follow in the footsteps of the wise, seek what they sought."
Hmm.
So, you know, if you're going to try to reboot Star Wars, you kind of have to look back to those myths, to the fairy tales and the hero stories and the trickster tales that, you know, obviously Lucas was interested in, all those folks were interested in the beginning. And, you know, instead of sort of doing a mixtape of the best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, you know, like we're talking about society, when the original trilogy came out, it was huge in influencing. There were political cartoons that had the Star Wars characters. You know, there was blame going around for Reagan's SDI program was called Star Wars.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was blame going around for suddenly we're militarist because of this movie. This movie has destroyed the Hollywood auteur movement of the 70s, you know, which... you know, you could make an equally good case, actually, that a bunch of the kids who got inspired to make movies then and are still doing it now, they went on to make, you know, more independent movies. And it's actually easier with the technology now to make indie movies.
Okay.
Trouble, of course, is getting it distributed. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, so much more controversial than just what was considered a kid's show at the time, because I think... partly because the characters were so iconic, they were so archetypal, so people can relate to them on so many levels. You know, we're looking back to the Nazis, we're looking back to, you know, earlier myths, and it really excites something in people. But you know, it's good to get beyond that, to just find out what is it, to just like explore yourself, explore society, and what is it that about that resonates.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too that you bring that up, Conch, because I think there was so much of an expectation coming from the Star Wars franchise to be relatable to these archetypes, to these myths, to these stories. And so the New Hope, started out and with this, you know, Luke's, like you were saying, David, Luke's path to, you know, identity, you know, like finding out who he is.
Well, they use Star Wars as an example in film school of the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Here's the lull. Here's the right. Overcome.
Yeah. Right. And so then when the new trilogy came out and then everyone gets introduced to Rey, there's that expectation of like, now this is her journey.
Right.
Right. So we're all going on this journey together. And then Last Jedi comes up and it's like everybody has that kind of like cocked their head to the side. Like, what? It just doesn't, it's not following that guideline.
Everything and everything Abrams set up, mm-hmm. Ryan just drills it into the ground.
It's
And now they pick up the pieces. Like, what are you going to do with this? And I really don't care anymore at this point. And it's tough. And you, clearly, I, you know, this was a big part of my life at one point.
Yeah. And it's still totally in there. Great. Yeah. And like you were saying, you resonated with Luke going back to it, you know, decades later, and you're like, wow, this was still impactful for me, and now it's this kind of like knife twist in the heart kind of thing. And I was reading through some articles and watching some of those YouTube videos that talked about the new trilogy and Rian Johnson's like intention, and he's like, basically he wanted to bring in the fans from all generations to come into this story. And I'm like, that's a wide stretch. You're like, you're grasping at straws here, because you're not going to please everyone if you try to do that. So there's a lot of like fan-based, you know, these new fans that are coming into the Star Wars story, and they're relating to these characters because there's, you know, there's a strong female presence. There's people of color in here. There's these actual characters that are coming that weren't seen in like such a heavy light in the earlier trilogies that are now getting kind of more of the spotlight. And so there's this expectation for people to relate to that kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, but you're stomping on the franchise here, Rian Johnson.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
And it's like, for me personally, I think J.J. Abrams appreciated the original trilogy, so he took to heart the yes, this is a new generation of fans, but I have such a love and a passion for the original Star Wars that I'm going to make sure that this is still there.
I think it would be an immensely difficult task to undergo, and the issue with this is because of what happened, I don't know if you can fix it, and that's what frustrates me.
Yeah,
it's like,
I don't think they're going to have to worry about fixing it. It's already done.
It's going to be done.
I mean, we waited this long to see Luke Skywalker come back, and this is what we get. And I feel frustrated with that as well, because I seen them all, and I kind of took the hiatus that you did. I wasn't going to watch Star Wars anymore. And then when I come back and I watch, and I get this cluster on television or on the screen. And like you said, I can see him trying to please everyone. Mm-hmm. And this is the result. It's not good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good.
No.
I mean, you could probably do it as a waiter, but you can't do it for a movie. It just doesn't work. The whole thing that they were trying to do with Kylo Ren, like try to make him like this instant, like you hated him overnight. And I couldn't find a reason to really hate him. He was supposed to be the villain, but I couldn't really see like, okay, I'm based upon the fact that Darth Vader presence was there. That's the reason why we're supposed to hate him. And like Luke Skywalker was supposed to be like the Yoda, but angry and less funny.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like trying. I was trying to figure out where he was going with all of this, and it was like not good for me.
Can I just say, what in the world happened with Leia? How did all of a sudden she has this like immense like use of the force, and she's flying through space.
That's
what is that about?
I think that's a he broke the rules of magic, which is an author's ability to solve conflict with magic is directly proportional to how well the reader understands said magic. And when we understand the force, and then suddenly you throw in this crazy wacky thing,
right?
And you're like, oh, and then so we can just band-aid that. Oh, it's the force. We can do whatever we want. It's like, well, that's frustrating.
Yes.
It's like this mythical, mysterious thing where we supposedly have, we know the rules to and the limitations, and
right.
Suddenly,
and we still keep her alive.
That's, yeah, that was odd.
I was like, what is?
Yeah, I couldn't. She kind of looked like a fairy flying through. And
it was Mary
Poppins. Yeah, she was like flying through space, and I wasn't really getting it. Like the crystals was on her.
No, it was just
no good. I didn't believe that she was supposed to survive. But my other thing was, it was anybody else excited when I'm not sure of what the other character was. I'm sorry, but when he told Kylo Ren to get rid of the helmet, I was just so happy that they didn't include the helmet. It was, I don't like the helmet.
Yeah,
that helmet was not my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allow him to see his face.
Yeah. No more helmet.
I do like Kylo Ren and what they can do with him, but the helmet thing kind of also knocks down his mythos from the first movie. It's like he idolizes Darth Vader. Somehow
right.
he gets Darth Vader's mask. This is what he wants to be in.
Right.
And then suddenly Snoke just goes, "We don't like that helmet."
Yeah.
And it's like, and he just, oh, okay,
yeah,
I'll knock it down.
No,
like,
that's right.
But this is your identity. This is everything you stand for. And so, it's not like Snoke didn't see him wearing the helmet all the time. It's
right.
like suddenly,
all of a
sudden, like
it irritated him that moment.
Yeah.
Get rid of that.
No.
Garbage.
Yeah. I don't know.
I seriously wrote like notes, and then I've been just
That's
analyzing.
Fine.
Just when I watched him, this isn't happening. That's uh-huh. how much. That's how bad I am, and I'm not alone. But that's where
you
I was coming
not.
From.
You are not.
Like imagine the opening scene of A New Hope, and you got the Tantive IV, you know, the Corellian Corvette,
mm-hmm.
and the Star Destroyer is overtaking it, and you know, tractor beaming, and in walks Darth Vader after they. And he walks in, all the smoke clears, and he slips on a banana peel and falls down.
Right.
And we're like, oh, there's our big bad guy that we're supposed to be afraid
or
of.
Or you got toilet paper hanging out his
cape
or
it's
something.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, huh, he's laughable. We don't care. We're not afraid of this. Why does this matter? What is the conflict here between the big bad empire when it's a joke? Well, The Last Jedi does that. Right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
The very beginning, you got Poe Dameron goes in there, and he's, like, making your mother jokes. And he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. It's like, the big bad guy who's in charge, Hux, it's like, is a buffoon. And so, like, what is – why are these people in charge? Why are we afraid of them? They're incompetent.
Yes.
And this is what we're setting up from the very get-go.
It's like the droid's personality got, like, infused.
I'm trying to find who to hate most, and I couldn't figure out. I was waiting this long to see Luke actually come back because it seemed like they wrote him out of the story or something, and just for him to come back, and then you get this.
Yes.
And then you get
the whole like final battle with he and Kylo Ren, but he's not actually there.
Another Mary Poppins thing. We just let's invent a new thing. Yeah.
You're like, what?
And he's wasting all these bullets on this wall. Just shoot it, destroy it.
Yeah.
And then just for the
and then this is kind of silly too, David, but when Luke actually accepts his mortality and disappears into the into the void, why is his robotic hand not there?
That's where the defenders will find all these things. Well, you got to read the books and whatever, but that's just nonsense.
His cape got left behind.
Yeah, but the other like the gaping holes, the plot holes all over this movie,
mm-hmm.
which a normal like. We're catering to a science fiction audience. We're catering to people who tear this stuff apart.
Yes.
And when you have things that happen that basically tear a hole within the entire universe that you set up here, when Admiral Hodo just or whatever blow, you know, does the hyperdrive through the whatever that giant star. It's like you just rewrote how the entire physics of this universe works in that little scene, and everyone's smacking their heads like going,
you disappointed so many people doing
that.
Introduced and then martyred.
No, it's not that. It's what she does. You can't put a ship in a hyperdrive and blow it through something. You just destroyed the entire fabric of this universe, because everything that this whole storyline is built upon could have been solved with a little, you know, carrier or whatever just blasted through the Death Star and we're done.
Yeah.
You know, everything. You can't do that.
Yeah. And the origin story of Rey.
Imagine
finger snapping in a dark cave.
That's another thing. Like, let's say Luke goes to Dagobah and he goes down there and Yoda's like, you got to do this. And Luke goes and he does everything much better than Yoda ever has done. And he's never trained or done anything. It's like, oh, well, he's an expert already.
Yeah.
That's what they did with her.
It's like, but that's where
they did, but they didn't, you know, they did, but they didn't.
It's such misplaced potential, this entire thing with that stuff. You had an opportunity of having Hux having that dynamic of being another Tarkin against Kylo Ren, like a bad guy who actually is serious. We fear him. We realize why they're in charge.
Yeah.
You have Rey, who's not just suddenly an instant expert. She has to do that same build up. She has to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was saying with the Yoda. You enjoyed watching Yoda train Luke. You got a kick out of
that. Riding on his back and things.
Yeah,
and like,
but you don't get a kick out of watching Luke go, get away from me. I don't like you.
Give Luke the respect he deserved. Make him into
the master.
Make him into the Obi-Wan that he is supposed to be, where he is a Jedi through and through. He doesn't suddenly want to kill his nephew because he might turn bad.
Right.
In his sleep. He was going to kill him in his sleep.
He'd done nothing wrong at that point.
Right.
I think that you might be evil.
Yeah.
Let's just nix that right now.
But Darth is okay. He's redeemable.
He's redeemable because he was my dad. So much.
By the way, Leia, I just almost killed your son. Now he's a bad guy. So good to deal with that.
Sorry.
I can't understand why he doesn't like me.
Family problems. Sorry. Oh man. Well, let's take a quick music break. We're gonna come back and talk more Star Wars here on Radio Geekly. But thanks, Michael and David. That was fun, and we're gonna continue. But I think I need to get a drink of water here. So let's take a quick musical break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. But their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the Queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the Force, they say. Do you see him hitting on the Queen? Though he's just 9 and she's 14. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday. Oh yes, it was
A little Weird Al there for you. Saga begins. And we are continuing on with this saga discussion of Star Wars here on May the 4th. And I'm just Jess. This is Radio Geekly. I'm joined by collective members Conch, David, Mike, and our special guests. We've got Mr. Bobby Roberts here in the studio. Hello.
Hello. This is kind of weird and wild for me. I've listened to KBOO since I was 13, way back in the days of Soup and Spaz playing hip-hop cuts and me finding them on the radio. I'm like, they don't play this on the radio. This is not stuff to... How did I tap into this weird pirate radio station that's got Rodney O and Joe Cooley bumping up inside my eardrums? And then, you know, I've known people who've worked here. I've known Conch for a while. I've known people who volunteered here. I've even been in Portland Radio for a hot minute back in the 2000s.
Nice.
But I've never actually been on KBOO, so this is... It's kind of freaking me out a little bit.
Welcome, welcome. We're gonna get some nerdy here on Radio Geekly.
Of course.
But for the folks that don't know about you, Bobby, why don't you give a little intro, a little brief resume on what you do?
speaking of the radio thing, that's probably the first best place to start. There used to be a show on a radio station that used to be called KUFO, which wasn't maybe the greatest of radio stations. Probably didn't help the community a whole lot in terms of culture and such, but if I may be a little bit self-aggrandizing, a little nerdy oasis in the middle of all this mean-spirited butt rock was a show called Court and Fatboy, and I used to be Fatboy.
Okay.
We used to do, movie screenings and special events, and we would just basically be a place to talk about pop culture in between, you know, Metallica and Tool records. And we did that for a fairly long time, and then that became a podcast, and then the podcast lasted for quite a bit, and now I am the calendar editor at the Portland Mercury. But I still every now and again dabble in podcast production. I helped launch Explain the X-Men, which is a very thorough podcast that basically takes the history of the X-Men and treats it like it's an actual history. And then I helped out with a show called Full of Sith, which is one of the better Star Wars podcasts online. And right now I'm producing a show called 80s All Over, which is very ambitious. It's two film critics, Drew McQueenie and Scott Weinberg, and they are reviewing every single major release of the 1980s in order by month.
Wow.
So I'm currently editing June of 1983. So that lets you know how long we've been doing it.
Wow.
So anyway, that's me. That's what I do.
And I
also, you know, blah blah quite a fair bit on Twitter about Star Wars. I was born in 77, so it seems sort of they were going to intertwine. It was
okay,
going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I right in believing that you still have a 35mm print of the original?
I do not have a print.
Okay.
I do not have a print of it. I wish to God I did, although I don't know what I would show it.
Because I remember seeing that at, I believe, the Baghdad back in the
yes,
day when Court and Fatboy were still together.
Yes, the very last Court and Fatboy show, as a matter of fact, we had a live show at the Baghdad, and it was a part of our film screening series. And the very last film that we screened without asking permission and illegally was the original Star Wars from 1977.
Mm.
So yeah, that went on at midnight. Nobody ratted us out, and I've just copped to a criminal offense, basically, right here on the radio. But it's been a while, and I don't think anyone's going to come after us, hopefully, he said. Yeah.
Disney. You got to watch out. Disney's got some deep reach now.
Disney, yes.
They know.
Were you a lot fatter then, or was Kurt just a lot?
No, it was it was a nickname from high school. I used to be fairly large, and I had very unimaginative friends. And so, being a fat male,
you needed to get a fatter friend.
I had a fair amount, but the nickname stuck. And you know, in radio, you almost always have to have some sort of weird nickname. But That was it. So I was Fat Boy until like my mid-30s, until eventually I was like, I'm Bob. Although my real name is Bobby Roberts, so that's weird enough anyway. That's also redundant and goofy in its own weird way.
But yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. Well, as we're continuing our discussion on Star Wars, I thought I'd give a fun little fact about the term May the 4th, because I did not know that this wasn't originally a Star Wars term. So according to StarWars.com, one of the earliest known records of May the 4th was used in pop culture back in 1979 described here, quoted by Alan Arnold when he was chronicling the making of The Empire Strikes Back for Lucasfilm. He quotes, "Margaret Thatcher has won the election and become Britain's first woman prime minister. To celebrate their victory, her party took a half page of advertising space in the London Evening News. This message, referring to the day of victory, was 'May the 4th be with you, Maggie. Congratulations.' Further proving to the extent of which Star Wars has influenced us all." So there you go, a little fun fact that that was not an original Star Wars term. So did any of you know that?
I didn't. I also like it when people that you may not find savory hijack things that you love.
Well, in this case, it's sort of the reverse. She came up with, or her handlers came up with a pun that sounded fun and tried to make her relatable in the way that old nasty people tend to try to do. It's like, oh, you know, like when you get tricked into going to like a church function or something, like all you want to do is play basketball. And they're like, but we're going to preach at you for an hour first. You're like, So she tried to do that with Star Wars, and then it turned out, like, you know, a decade later, Star Wars fans who didn't even know just sort of were like, because May the 4th is a completely fan-fabricated holiday. Like,
oh, yes.
Yeah, Lucasfilm never had anything to do with it until just recently, because it had grown so big organically from the fandom itself sort of promoting it. But
yeah.
It's funny how they listen to the fans with stuff like that to promote their movies.
Yes.
But they don't listen to the fans or its characters.
Well, I think we've talked about this before, but, you know, fan driven also comes into merchandising. Mm. You know, like I honestly think the creation of the Porgs was basically just for merchandise purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who wants to buy a space penguin? I do.
I heard if you go to Disney World, it is covered in Porgs. I can't verify that, but I've heard that.
Oh, okay.
But also I've heard that the merchandising this round isn't doing so hot. Hasbro had to mark down their earnings. They're not.
For as far as when, like, from Last Jedi or?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, because BB-8 blew up.
Right. But people aren't buying the Nazi BB-8.
Yeah. What is the new one? What is the new one called?
People aren't buying Rey with different jacket. I don't know.
with the cape that comes on and off.
You had Luke Skywalker on, you know, on Tatooine. Empire, you had Luke Skywalker riding a Tauntaun. And
right.
You know, yeah.
We want our shirtless Rey.
No, you got it backwards. Ren. Kylo.
Yeah, Kylo Ren.
Ren.
You might get the wrong crowd with what you just said.
I don't know. Bobby, your thoughts on the new trilogy and maybe possibly like your hopes and desires for the last,
the last chapter?
The last chapter of the trilogy. I mean, we had our grudges right now of just our frustration.
We did.
Yeah, it seems like you guys were very much not fans of the most recent chapter. So
yes.
I am definitely a man without a country right now in this room.
It is totally fine.
Well, no. But I mean, like the last chapter is sort of hard to even jump at. Like you don't quite know exactly where things should be pointing to, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think a lot of the problems in watching Star Wars and being a Star Wars fan is at this point a just sort of a sense of unearned ownership, and that sort of gets in the way of just enjoying the story as it's being told to you, because there is so much sort of ingrained, built up, decades long dogma as to what you think a Star Wars movie needs to be.
Yes.
And I think a lot of what we're seeing right now in regards to, you know, the hashing of things, hashing them over, fighting over them, coming off the top rope after smacking your elbow four times and causing the person below you to explode in a mountain of porgs. like a lot of that, I think, is tied into the idea of, you know, this is not what Star Wars is. And
yes.
Part of what I remember Rian Johnson talking about in regards to why he decided to take the creative tack he took was that he needs it to be something else, and the series needs to be something else. Otherwise, you get caught up in this sort of loop of regurgitation, which can be sort of comforting and satisfying on a, you know, a basic nostalgia bath level.
Mm-hmm.
But that also sort of robs a series of vitality when it needs vitality in order to keep moving forward and to keep being something new for new audiences that keep coming to it.
Right.
So with The Last Jedi, it obviously sets up a place where everyone is sort of looking around with question marks popping out over the head, whether they liked it, whether they hated it, whether they fell somewhere in between, although that percentage of the fan base seems to be very small. Nobody seems to be like, I don't know about it, how I feel about it. Like, people either really feel something about it.
Or they don't.
Or they're just like, whatever. I don't know where you go with this. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, if you look at how the story is laid out, obviously, you got to deal with whatever the hell the First Order is right now. And it's sort of this weird, unstable, infighting, sort of incompetent fascist regime of young people who are angry and they don't quite know why they're angry, but they know that they're owed something. Uh-huh. And if that sounds semi-familiar to you, then yeah, you've been paying attention to current events in the last five, 6 years. So you sort of have to deal with that, whether that sort of explodes itself and then the, you know, our resistance comes in and finishes it off.
Right.
I don't know what you do. You've got a stormtrooper who escaped. It seems to me like the best way to finish off that guy's arc is to have him free the rest of the stormtroopers. So I'm sort of hoping that's a thing that happens. You've got this legacy character, the nephew of Luke Skywalker, the son of Han Solo and Leia Organa. And he is a person who is 100% dedicated to being the worst version of himself that he can possibly be, rejecting every possible option and opportunity that is offered to him. Everyone is giving this kid the benefit of the doubt at all times. Yeah. I just did it. I called him a kid. He's a 30-plus-year-old man. everyone keeps trying to offer him the benefit of the doubt, and all he keeps going is, no, it shouldn't be that way. And he's just this spoiled, pouty school shooter.
Is he suffering from affluenza? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. He's this spoiled, pouty school shooter of a character, right? And people still think that the option on the table is that he will be redeemed and saved. And I kind of understand that. I kind of understand that Star Wars is a tale of redemption and looking for the best in people. I understand that. I get that idea. But I also think it could be much more resonant, especially for audiences of this age, to deal with a question that I think is much more pertinent, which is, what do you do when someone you care about simply refuses to help themselves or let themselves be helped? That is a situation that I think a lot of us have a lot of experience with. And it also just seems to me, on a surface level, and this is a very much a surface read, if you've got a new series where you've got the woman at the center of it, self-made, who has every opportunity to go wrong and has rejected all those opportunities in favor of being a legitimate good person and doing stuff for herself and for the betterment of people because she cares that much and she is just inherently a good person. Why would you then take all this ground being laid and shift the focus towards the redemption of a person who doesn't want it, doesn't deserve it, and won't do anything good with it? So I think on the one, like, that's the primary storytelling conflict I feel here, is that Star Wars tells you, well, the whole point of the story is that the, you know, the clammy white guy who is pouting and murdering everybody at every instance is going to be the good guy at the end of the story. But on the other hand, you're like, why would anyone in 2019, which is when the next one comes out, why would anyone want to watch that? Why would anyone want to go to a piece of escapist fantasy to watch the woman put herself under the needs of a pouty, spoiled, affluent, privileged dude who has done nothing to deserve any of the redemption that we think we should just be giving him?
Well, we're gonna have to leave it at there, Bobby. That's a really large question. But I want to thank everyone in the studio for participating and listening to A Radio Geekly. Thanks to all of our listeners here. Thanks to our lovely board op. I'm going to run down some quick events that you can catch here. Today, May the 4th, at 3 p.m. at Quarter World, they're celebrating Star Wars Day with some special pinball arcade games. Information at quarterworldarcade.com. Also today at the Star Wars store in Happy Valley, there is a May the 4th party with a meet and greet with Daniel Logan, a.k.a. Young Boba Fett. Also, if you are not into doing any Star Wars activities, you can go see LeVar Burton. That is right. Jordy LaForge reading live at 7 p.m. at Revolution Hall. More information at revolutionhall.com. And next weekend, May 12th and 13th at the Oregon Convention Center is the Geek Craft Expo. Information can be found at geekcraftexpo.com. All your Star Wars info, of course, is at starwars.com. Bobby Roberts, a website for folks to check you out?
Oh, you can just find me on Twitter. I'm easy to find. At Bobby Roberts PDX is probably the best place for you to find me. But if you would Perfect. Like to listen to a podcast that I make, go to 80sallover.com.
Wonderful. Thank you all. Stay tuned at noon for Moving On.